Iambic Audiobooks and Biblioasis present Kahn and Engelmann by Hans Eichner, read by Charles Bice. Chapter 1. Sidoni. 1. In the summer of 1938, a Jewish refugee is going for a walk on Carmel Beach. Is he from Cologne, from Berlin, from Vienna? It doesn't matter. 20 meters out from shore, a man is fighting against the waves and yelling for help in Hebrew. The refugee stops to listen, takes his jacket off, folds it neatly. One should never act too hastily. And while taking off his tie and shoes as well, before jumping into the sea to help the yelling man, he exclaims indignantly, "What a fool! Hebrew he has learned! Swimming he should have learned!" That's a traveling joke. It was told much the same way in 1789 in Mainz, when the first émigrés arrived there and went for walks along the Rhine in their elegant clothes. But precisely because it is a traveling joke, it is also a Jewish joke. For who has traveled, or, as is mostly the case, has fled, more often than the Jews? From Egypt, from Babylonia, from Canaan, from Spain, from Galicia, from the Third Reich. For me, though, this joke is situated once and for all at the foot of Mount Carmel, because I live 100 meters above the beach and look out at the sea every morning with ever-renewed delight, much as people in Weimar used to be able to look at the Ettersberg before the concentration camp was built there. To be sure, there are inhabitants of Weimar again now who can look with delight at the Ettersberg. Human memory is short. How did I get here, where I bathe poodles during the day, so that I can walk along the beach in the evening? I will reconstruct it, although I am actually not very interested in myself. In one of Thomas Mann's early stories, he writes that Schiller occasionally needed only to look at his hand in order to be filled with an enthusiastic tenderness for himself. He could afford to do that. For the likes of us, interest in oneself, to say nothing of tenderness, is usually a sign of immaturity. At any rate, on my way to Haifa, Jews travel, there was one thing or another that may be worth mentioning as typical of the experiences of my generation. And because I am usually too tired in the evenings to undertake anything more sensible, I am getting old, it may be worth my while to make the attempt. I'll begin by rummaging through a shoebox full of old photographs that I inherited from my mother, along with a pile of yellowed letters and the princely sum of £15. The oldest of these photographs, dating from about 1880, but technically quite good, shows a middle-aged woman and a girl of about 17 years. The woman, with her straight hair combed back, her high forehead and dark eyes, reminds me of my grandmother. But of course, she isn't my grandmother, but rather her mother, my great-grandmother. Like her mother, the girl herself, my grandmother, is wearing a heavy black cotton dress that fastens closely around her neck, is belted at the waist, and falls below her ankles. On her feet, she wears a pair of high-buttoned boots, to which I will return shortly. The only jewelry she is wearing is a cameo brooch, and if you take the difference in their ages into account, her face is astonishingly similar to her mother's. But what is the story of those boots? In shoe stores when I was 16,